I'm interested in purchasing some gold coins, right, Dennis, with the intention of preserving wealth in something other than paper.
That's it.
And at the same time, benefiting from rising gold prices in the future. Can Andy help me decide if bullion coins or semi-numismatic coins would be the best serve my purposes?
I would say yes.
Okay. Why?
Well, with bullion, you only have one way to make money.
Gold price.
Gold goes up.
Right.
The bullion goes up.
Gold
goes down, the bullion goes down.
Mm-hmm.
But with a semi-numismatic coin and with a numismatic coin, but more so with a semi-numismatic coin,
mm-hmm.
the premium above the gold content also rises with the price of gold. So where right now you could buy a $20 gold piece for like a 10% premium over gold, there was... when gold was 1900, you would have been paying. Let's see, if it was 1924. You would have been paying a 30% premium over gold. So, with semi-numismatic coins, you benefit both from the rise in the gold prices and the scarcity factor. So, yeah, I would consider semi-numismatic coins as a replacement or surrogate for gold, bullion, bars and bricks and blocks and Krugerrands and maple leaves and American eagles and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I always prefer the classic American gold coin, even mm-hmm. if it's circulated, even if it's used, where it doesn't have a lot of numismatic premium, but just enough. And I've watched it in my lifetime. When I first started in this business, if a coin was circulated, it was a half dollar, a walking Liberty half, or a Franklin half, or a John Kennedy half. It didn't matter. They were all thrown in the same bags and just sold for their silver content. But now, as time has moved on, what do you know? Suddenly, we separate the Kennedys and the Franklins and the walking Liberty halves, and each sells for a higher premium than the previous. So already, in my lifetime, we've seen where non-numismatic coins, let's call them semi-numismatic coins, back then there was no collector market. Now, suddenly, there is. So you can't get that with bullion. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Do you have semis now for sale?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of semis do you got for sale?
Oh, the $20 Liberty.
$20 probably, Liberty.
Yeah. The pre-St. Gaudens $20 Liberty was struck from 1849 to 1907.
What do they go for about?
Not much over their gold content. I mean, you can buy a mid-state coin for like a 20% premium.
It's 20% not, over the 1200?
Yeah, uh-huh. It's not insane.
So you got a semi-numismatic,
yeah,
and you got the gold. And
yeah, you got a 100-year-old 1-ounce gold coin.
Kind of nice, yeah.
That is in mint condition. On a scale of 1 to 70 now, it's not going to be a 65 or a 66, but it might be a 61 or 2. And to me, that's perfectly fine for the amount of premium that
And this would be the kind of coin, if gold would someday in our lifetime go to, say, 3,000 or 4,000, that you would sell.
If gold goes up, they go up.
They go, of course.
It's just that simple.
It's just because they're an ounce of gold.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, they got to go up, right?
Big 1-ounce gold coin.
Yeah.
No way they're going to not go up.
So do you recommend to your clients that they have some of these semi-guys in their portfolio?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay.
It's a foundational coin.
Foundational. That's like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter the amount of money that you're investing.
Mm-hmm.
That certain percentage of it should go into these foundational coins.
Oh, and yeah.
They're the ones that you don't mind selling when gold hits.
Oh, I see. Because you don't want to sell your real special guys.
Oh, no.
Ever.
Right. Ever. Right.
Ever.
You know. Ever is a good
Unless
time.
Hillary Clinton gets elected and then
Even if
you
got
to move to Santa Fe or something.
Yeah. No.
San Jose.
just in witnessing that nickel, right? That nickel that sold for $4.5 million. You know, that's a coin, not no gold, no silver. It's nickel. It's not even made of a precious metal, really, although nickel is starting to become. But all during this cycle, gold's up, gold's down, gold sideways. It didn't matter. That coin just kept going up every single year. And when the last owner finally sold it, $4.5 million, like four times what it was worth in 1998. So it's hard to ignore.
It's 15 minutes after the hour, September 12, 2018. Hey, would you like to... this is not planned. We don't plan any of this stuff, but why do you continue to take sulfur. I mean, how long have you been on that?
I don't know.
How long has it been? 2 years? I don't know.
Yeah, it's been at least 2 years.
So every day you glop it down?
Oh, yeah. Big giant spoon. I have 9 pounds of it sitting still in my safe.
And you put it in your safe.
And I keep it in my safe.
So what do you think? How do you, what does it do for you?
It just picks me up. I often wondered, what's in this stuff? I wonder if this white powder is something other than what it's supposed to be.
Is Patrick selling some illegal stuff here?
Because it really does clear the head.
It does, doesn't it?
And, you know, start the engines, so to speak. So for me, it's like a heaping giant teaspoon of sulfur in the morning before anything else. Like, boom, here goes my sulfur. I crunch it and chew it and then wash it down with 16 ounces of water. And along with that 16 ounces of water goes 2 holestrol tabs, which is my new favorite supplement. I used to take that hemoxide until, this is funny, right? So hemoxide helped my blood pressure for a great many years.
Hemoxide? Was that a farm?
It was a supplement.
Oh, was it something?
But it was bought by a pharma company
who
decided, nah, we don't need to produce this stuff anymore. Love how they do that. And several of my friends were taking it as well. So then came to my rescue because I'd been taking beet juice and celery juice, which was a cumbersome process, for the better part of a year and a half while there was no hemoxide. And then you gave me holestrol.
Oh, from the Pearlseum Company. Holestrol.
From the Holestrol.
It was funny, folks. This lady came on the show, and I had never heard of this product, and we were talking about Pearlseum that we do, and she said, oh, you got to try. If you know anybody with high blood pressure, you really just send them some of this because this form is magic, some kind of magic herbs from China. So I ordered 2 containers, right, and they sent them to you of Holestrol, which is on the Pearlseum website.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you experience from that?
Well,
I was getting
these high blood pressure headaches so much so I, of course, went to the cardiologist who, you know, prescribed these beta blockers and, oh, you need this and that. It was like 3 different pills. And I just didn't like the side effects, the way that because to me, if I'm going to take something, it's got to make me feel better.
Yeah.
If I feel worse after taking it, don't tell me it's helping me because you're not going to sell me on that.
Right.
So whenever I took these prescription pharma things, beta blocker, et cetera, I felt worse. Huh. I didn't feel better.
I felt worse. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I took the Holestrol, the pounding headaches went away. The fuzzy mind went away. I mean, all of the...
How quick did that
happen? I would say within a week.
Really?
And within 10 days, within 2 weeks, I was putting that... I just went ahead and put the Holestrol in the safe. I went in there with the sulfur.
Don't do that.
So I had, you know, the one bottle that you gave me, which I kept with
You're
me.
Hilarious.
I'd take 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon.
Like, who's going to steal your Holestrol?
You never know. You just never know. But... I started really taking the Holestrol like religiously, and so think about when that was. Day before yesterday, I realized, wait a minute, I looked down in the bottom of the second bottle. Those were the 2 that you sent me, and I looked, and there's maybe 8 pills. Now I'm nervous. So I called. I went to your website, scrolled down through the store, found the Holestrol, clicked on it, ordered 6 or 8 bottles.
Did you really?
Yeah. Wow. Because
how many
and they
tell
say
you to take a day?
You know, this is the curious thing about this product. I've never seen in another product. You know, typically most supplements say just keep taking it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the Holestrol says, well, you could take it for, you know, I think they said 8 to 10 weeks. And then you don't have to take it anymore.
That'd be interesting if that happens.
Yeah, wouldn't that be? I mean, I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's not very good marketing. But
right. Huh? Well, maybe it does help the body to fix something at a deep level.
It does. Maybe it does. Yeah.
I don't know.
I still, it's a proprietary blend, but when I take it, I feel better. So.
Well, we got to keep you around, kid, because, you know,
gauge.
If we're at midlife here, I mean, I don't want you going anywhere. What
Thanks.
Am I going to do?
I don't want to go anywhere.
What am I going to do with myself?
I'm having lots of fun here.
So thanks, Andy, for that. That wasn't planned, as you know. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, the Holestrol. If you know somebody with high blood pressure, gift them with it. Just, you know, send it to them. Just send them a couple bottles and say, "Here, George, take this." Because if you send them stuff, and you know, I don't know, it's probably not cool to interfere with people's lives. But you know, if it's somebody you know or a relative, you know, do something like that and say, "Hey, try this." You never know. And then we, of course, have the Pearlseum. And what I'm doing with my teeth now is just so cool because it's so easy and they've never looked better. And as much as I love the Dr. Ellie protocol, this is better than this as far as the way my teeth are looking and behaving and feeling and shiny and pearly. I'm just doing the, what's the name of that product? I just spaced it right out there. The whatever it is. Okay, it's the one with chlorine dioxide. Closest, go to Walgreens, someplace like that. And don't get a flu shot when you go to Walgreens. Be careful, they want to give you one. So just jump in there and grab some Closest. I think they have a lot of food stores too in the pharmacy department. And it's just chlorine dioxide, which is similar to Miracle Mineral Supplement, which is what they throw people in jail for selling, except if you're Colgate, Palmolive, you can sell it because that's what it is. But well, that's another story. And then you do the Closest, that's what I do. And then I do put a little bit of this Pearlseum on my toothbrush and boom. And then you brush your teeth with that. And that's, I don't think you're gonna need to do anything else. I really don't. And boy, that's a cool thing. And you don't scratch your teeth like you do with toothpaste because they have chalk in it. And Dr. Ellie taught us that's one of the reasons you don't wanna get toothpaste with chalk and glycerin. Glycerin will help your teeth do not remineralize. And this is the Pearlseum is calcium. Well, here's how it works on the bone and why it helps your teeth. And then try some and get two containers. You get a discount. Get two containers when you click through our website. Previously with Dr. Rulin Chu about her product called Pearlseum. So let's talk about the teeth first. Explain to me what's going on, because there's something magical when you dip your little toothbrush in water. Why do they look so sparkly and just, I don't know, something very energetically about the look of them?
Yeah, it's very, very magical. So like a group of scientists in France discovered that when you put the pearl next to the bones or skins or other connective tissues, and they find it stimulates new growth of the bones and skins and connective tissues, and also to make existing bones and the skins are more healthy and stronger. So brush your teeth with the pearl, then your teeth will make your existing teeth stronger, and also it will filling up, you know, teeth with the Pearlseum, and the pearl powder will stimulate the new bone growth and also make the existing teeth very strong.
It's really a great product. You'll love it. Take it internally or on your teeth, and you can click an order, see the ad right there, Pearlseum, the nice green container, Pearlseum, on OneRadioNetwork.com. I've been doing quite a bit. I bought two containers, and that's what we recommend, and we're actually changing the link. I think Sharon's going to do it today. So when you click on the Pearlseum product, it's going to go right to the two-container link, which is pretty cool, and then you get a big discount. So I would get two, put one in your bathroom, one in your kitchen, and then with your supplements, and take that little spoon, and you can do three or four little spoonfuls right in your mouth. And it's really pretty interesting to take it internally. The calcium is what goes into your cells, and this kind of calcium will really get in there, not like a piece of dead rock. These pearls are living little pearls. They're just oyster tears. Did you know that? They're oyster tears. And yeah, that's right. They're oyster tears. Actually, what they do is they... When oysters get aggravated, she said, then they cry, and then these are tears. And that's true. That's a true story. So it's, I don't know if it's true that most of these oysters then are left wingers because they're always crying. Don't get me started. Anyway, so try some of this Pearlseum. I think you're gonna really like it. And I just got an email. How do I get 9 pounds like Andrew? Just email me Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. If you want more than 4 pounds of sulfur, and we'll hook you up. Hook you up, we'll hook you up.
Know the source on One Radio Network.
Andrew, did you know that the pearls oysters cry
when they get
PO'd, and that's the problem. Well,
they get irritated.
They get irritated.
Yes, they get a grain of sand gets in there.
Is that what it
lips,
is?
And then it tries to, just like we do, something gets in your eye, you know, you cry.
And they cry pearls.
Yeah, well, they cry a substance, you know, wraps around this bit of sand until it's no longer an issue. So.
And that's what a pearl is.
That's what a pearl is.
How did you know that?
Well, I don't know. It's just another one of those useless bits of trivia that I've absorbed over the last...
Useless bits of trivia. So,
a pearl is made.
Yeah. What would you do if you were mayor of Chicago and you
free
knew,
money.
You knew that the whole thing was going to fall apart and that your bunks were like, check this out, junk.
Right.
Junk.
Your bonds.
Junk. They are like below junk.
Yeah.
And your pension situation is so dire that, check this out. Hold on a sec. This is, so the Chicago pensions are only half to quarter funded. Laborers, they're 49% funded. Teachers, 49%. Municipal, 28% funded. Police, they're 24% funded. Fire, 20% funded. One of the biggest cities in the country with billions of people. And what would you do if you were mayor and this was going on?
Free money.
First thing you would do is say, let's do a what is it?
A universal basic income.
And then the second thing you do is not run for office the next time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what he's going to do.
I think I'm done. Yeah.
Unbelievable,
let somebody
man.
Else see if they can make a better... this is President Obama's chief of
staff. I know.
Rahm
Emanuel. What are these people thinking? They don't care, do they?
Well, no, I think he does care. But his solutions are not...
they're a little left. They're a little left of center.
Yeah, and not really realistic.
No, come on. Yeah. So so now he's promising a universal basic income. That's what he wants to do. Where's all this money going to come from? Oh, we talked about it, 2 weeks ago, that they're just going to borrow it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they're just going to borrow so they can refund the things.
The new bonds,
yes. Boy, I don't think you'd be wanting to live in there,
Meet
man.
Meet the new bond, just like the old bond, except trust us, we're going to really pay this one.
Yeah. Chicago has the largest pension debt versus revenue in the 10 biggest cities. Chicago's 12.3 times, I guess revenue, right?
Yes.
12.3. Who's second? Oh, Dallas, they're doing good. 5.4 times revenue.
And their police pensions, their pensions in general are... just as bad as Chicago.
Yeah. Houston, 4.0.
Yeah.
I thought these Texas cities knew what they were doing, man.
Well, not the left ones.
Oh, that's right. These are lefties, aren't they? Los Angeles, no, they're not left out there. 3.5 times revenue. San Jose, they're in good shape. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia, New York City.
Yes.
San Diego.
Yes.
Phoenix, San Antonio. Mm-hmm. But I did see this morning, and you know, Austin is like... so far left, they're almost right. They have one of the strongest ratings. I wonder why. Well, I guess it's all the high-tech thing.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they pay their bills, at least.
They do,
Austin. Yeah.
Austin is the exception. Mm-hmm. So I hope they keep Austin weird.
Yeah, they're trying.
And like you said, they're so far left.
They're almost right.
That they're almost right. Yeah.
Do you see where they have 8,000 Whole Foods employees that are all trying to get together to unionize, something that CEO John Mackey's been trying to stave off for years, but they're all getting antsy because Jeff Bezos makes $280 million a day.
Sure.
Did you see that? $280 million a day? How is that possible?
Well, A, he makes his earnings off of Amazon, but B, he makes it off of the share price of Amazon. So
$280 million a day?
Man, that's a startling number, isn't it?
Boy, I tell you what. You could just have him for one client and you wouldn't need anybody else. But that wouldn't be any fun.
It's almost getting that way now. I got one or two clients that are really working me to death.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, when you get that kind of money, you know what to do. That's right. On the phone, who's this? Good morning.
Hey, guys. It's Sean in Seattle.
Hey, Sean.
I have a question here. My elevator pitch on 9/11 is 1 + 1 plane equals...
Three buildings
came down.
That's pretty good math. Yeah,
you had an elevator pitch. What is your elevator pitch to explain to maybe get somebody to think about 9/11 if you have 3 minutes to explain it in just without any of the, you know, the technical stuff. We don't need a grade school education to figure out 1 + 1 only equals 2.
Yeah. But
you got anything better than that?
No, that's a pretty good one. And I've divorced myself from the entire topic because, like the Kennedy assassination, it started to consume me. And it's been so long now that I throw it on the pile along with Pearl Harbor and the Gulf of Tonkin and all the other unexplainable things. And there's too much that is unexplained. And then who benefited? I love to follow the lawyers' line of reasoning. Who benefited from 9/11? And what certainly wasn't the terrorists, and it wasn't the American people.
You know, Sean, if you're in the elevator, maybe you talk to folks about the money and the Fed, and that might help them more.
That's my focus.
Yeah, that might help them more, you know?
Yeah. So I'd love to accommodate there, Sean. I've done, you know what, we did a 10th anniversary show that I'm sure is in the archives.
Mm-hmm.
So 2011, I really dissected the hell out of it. It's not an elevator pitch, but, you know, go for it. And there are much more succinct explanations out there. So, you know, people that have really spent a lot more time than I did researching the subject, and I would defer to those folks.
What was the anniversary? We do homeschooling here, so what was the anniversary?
I think 10th year, wasn't it?
10th year, 2011.
2011, I think we did 10 year in the archives.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Cool. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
But I liked his elevator pitch. That was good. You know, a lot of people don't realize that. There were two planes that hit two towers in New York, but yet three buildings fell. Three buildings with two planes. Talk about two birds with one stone. That's a pretty good one right there.
Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, The Real World of Money. Join us, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We talk often of karma and when it comes to money and all this stuff. We've been following Andrew pretty closely, the whole glyphosate Monsanto thing, and Robert Kennedy is. I didn't know that he was one of the lead attorneys on the on the 289 deal.
Mm-hmm.
The $289 million thing for this one fellow that got Hodgkin's from spraying the glyphosate thing, and he says that there's a new 450. Litigant, 450 clients class action going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Kennedy said that we have new explosive documents concerning the Bayer-owned agro giant's activities in Europe, according to Kennedy. He says we're in possession of several hundred documents that had been declassified. He said these are very explosive. This is just the beginning. Bayer stock, if you go back to, this is interesting, back to 2018, I'm sorry, January of this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was $120, January 2018. The stock, you know what it is today?
Mm-mm.
$70.
Hey.
Yeah, 40%.
Well, I know that whole Bayer merger thing.
Now people who... you know, they paid 59, I think, billion, was it, for Bayer? Cash.
Yeah, right.
Cash.
Cash.
So now a lot of the folks who were involved at the beginning, they're beginning to question whether Bayer withheld a lot of this information, do you think, before they sold the company for $60 billion cash.
Mm-hmm.
Could they ever unwind something like that if they could prove that you lied?
No.
No, okay.
No, not unwind. They can sue.
They can sue.
Can't undo the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how this is going to play out. They're never going to really let go of this, Andrew, are they? This glyphosate thing. I mean, they got too much invested in it to ever give in and say, you know, this is not good.
Hey, they used to say that about asbestos.
Yeah, but they finally gave in, right?
Yeah, gave in for what though?
Yeah, thing. Well, they'll say like, okay, we give, but
yeah, nowhere near the damage that was done.
Yeah, sure. And I saw an article that Kennedy wrote where when they sold the company, they said that we have $350 million set aside for lawsuits, right? And they blew that in the first one. And there's 4,000 lawsuits pending, you know, on this glyphosate thing.
But lawyers are a lot cheaper than that. That's to say, look how long the cigarette industry held off the lawsuits.
So. I know.
Yeah, Shakespeare had a point.
What do you say?
First, we kill all the lawyers. I'm sorry. If you're a lawyer, forgive me.
You know, what's that old line about? What's 2,000 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean called?
A good start.
A good start.
Yeah, yeah, what was it J.P. Morgan said? I don't need a lawyer to tell me what I can't do. I need a lawyer to tell me how to do what I can't do. Yeah. So, I mean, the idea that these folks were completely ignorant to the negative effects just doesn't fly for me. You know, you didn't know your product was doing this.
Oh, they knew.
You knew, and you didn't care because the profits were so enormous. So you figured you'd run it out for as long as you could and then sell out and let somebody else worry about it.
Mm-hmm. And boy, they sold too.
Mm-hmm.
How could a company like Bayer have $60 billion just sitting around?
Well, maybe you should study the history of that company.
Oh, that's old money,
oh,
right?
Oh, man. Yeah. Prescott Bush.
Oh, that's a Bushy. Hey, no wonder George has $4,000 suits. Huh?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
George was born with a silver spoon, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
not bad for a public servant.
So what was Bayer doing like back in the old days when they started? I guess they started with aspirin. It was the deal, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Check them out. Uh-huh. I think the history of the Bayer company is, tied in with Nazi Germany.
Oh, the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Gets real sticky.
Yeah, you'll find the usual suspects, right? Mm-hmm. The same people. So, not surprised. Not at all.
Mm-hmm. I have been a listener since the KLBJ days when Andrew was on, and my son and I look forward to your show every week.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate your time. Sure. Silver and gold question. The silver to gold ratio is higher than it has been for years.
Right.
Somewhere over 80-1. I'm a physical collector, numismatic, as well as some bullion, and a client of yours, Andrew. Oh, he's a client.
Would
it be a good tactic to sell semi-numismatic gold coins and flip into silver? I would think that premiums would be an issue. Would it be better to flip into junk silver or into Morgans or silver numismatics?
So somebody recently asked me that same question. So
what is he asking here?
Their thought was they should sell their semi and numismatic gold
and buy
coin silver and gold.
Thinking that silver is going to go to $50 someday or something.
No, their thought was that in the event of a financial crisis, there's not going to be any people around to buy rare coins. Everybody's going to want bullion coins. And, you know, for me, that's not worth the risk of confiscation, quite frankly, is the number one issue with bullion coins. The confiscation order of 1934, made semi-numismatic or coins of rare and unusual collector value exempt from confiscation. But all of your bullion coins were. So it would just seem to be rather ironic that you hold your semi-numismatic coins for this long, decide to trade them for bullion, and then have your bullion declared illegal to own.
But so that's not really a strong possibility.
You know what? I said that 5 years ago. Yeah. It wasn't a possibility.
Now, who knows?
Now it's scary. It's really frightening.
No kidding.
Well, we could listen to Diallo some more.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reality is that the circumstances now are much worse than they were in 2008. We papered over the problem and then didn't solve anything.
Oh, because of the whole populism movement, they're going to kind of keep pressing their thumb on you.
Yeah, now you got the people in Chicago listening to a mayor that suggests we're going to just give everybody free money.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to create money and just give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see how this is going to make the situation better. As I said before, when the socialists go looking for the rich, I don't want them to even stop at my house. I just want them to keep going. You know, go look for the rich.
Eat the rich, right?
Yeah, so that's the logic. It seems as though we're heading, the pendulum swinging, right? We'll know better in 50 days or so, but it seems as though the I mean, that Ben Franklin warned us against it. I think even Madison warned us against it, that once the people realize they can vote themselves whatever benefit they want, then there's no limit to how much they'll take.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of anticipation to do today's IPO for NIO, which is a flashy Chinese startup called China's Tesla, which predictably hopes to rival Tesla in China, but it kind of dudded out. After the pricing, its IPO at the low end of $6, NIO stock price broke for trading at $6 and traded at $6.50, prompting fear, blah, blah, blah. But it's nothing. It's doing nothing. It's like a bomb. Something happened. Nobody liked it. I don't think anyone wanted to do it.
Mercedes is going to roll out its electric cars.
Yeah, I know. We talked about it, last week?
Stay the hell away. You know, that market, the risk there is unbelievable.
And plus, the president of Mercedes doesn't go on a big TV show and smoke pot either. So
and drink whiskey.
And drink whiskey. That's probably a good thing, too.
Yeah, but as I pointed out, if you were trying to take a company public, take a public company private.
Like Elon, supposedly.
Elon Musk wants to buy the whole company back.
Uh-huh.
So if you were trying to do that, then yeah, you would go on a Joe Rogan show and smoke some weed and drink some whiskey and act like a total fool. And then your stock would tank and it would be cheaper to buy.
That's what somebody was on the show too about Monsanto conjectured that, Patrick, you don't want to get too kind of positive about some of the stuff about Monsanto because they thought that this whole thing was a controlled demolition.
Right.
That if you drop the stock prices by half, which they almost have, then you just buy more stock.
Yeah.
And then, so that's possible too, gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, planet Earth, you know, you just can't even keep up with these this kind of stuff, can you?
And if there's an angle, they'll come up with it. If you leave a hole in your security, goodness.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to imagine when you get that much time on your hands and that much coffee and 60-year-old scotch, and you sit around talking about billions of dollars you could lose, that you're not going to come up with plan B.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
you know
I do
saying?
Know exactly
like,
what you're saying.
Why would you sit around and just say, oh man, oh, woe is us, you know?
Yeah.
But nobody likes glyphosate, so what are we going to do?
Right.
They're going to do something.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that when I get all kind of positive about months. I don't wish anybody ill will, and I don't want a company to crash, but this stuff is crap. Excuse me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very poisonous stuff.
It is.
Oh, well, here's an email I picked up in 1872, three SN
dollar.
Coin, silver coin, MS-66. What does that mean?
Three cent
silver coin, MS-66.
Wow.
I don't know the history of this one. Could you elaborate? I paid $675 for it. It was a lot less for the listed on NGC.
Mm-hmm.
Is the prices on NGC accurate?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
The problem is, back in 87, when we were trying to attract collectors to the coin market, or investors, shall I say, the idea that, you know, I'm going to be able to pin a grade on this coin. I'm going to call it an MS-63. But just like having a yardstick or a tape measure that didn't have fractions in between the inches. So from 3 inches to 4 inches, well, that's 3 inches, right? That everything in between 3 and 4 inches is 3 inches. Not till it actually gets to 4 inches can you call it four. And then between 4 and 5, not until it actually gets to 5 can you call it 5. And I thought, okay, this is good. I mean, it's good that it sets a floor, but it doesn't set a ceiling. And so is a coin that just made Mint State 66 worth as much as a coin that's almost 67? Hell no, absolutely not. And will I sell a coin that just made 66 or made 66 with some eye appeal problems for less than a, you know, say a 66.5, which is what NGC is giving you in the price guide, a typical coin. So if a coin is below typical, it's going to sell for less. And it's above typical, it's going to sell for more. Sounds like you got a coin that was just made 66. If you would have seen the same coin in a 65 holder, the price would have probably been about the same. So it is ultimately the coin and not the grade. Every coin is like a fingerprint. It's not like a share of IBM where one share is the same as the next. That's why I always urge folks, eye appeal is the name of the game. When you look at a coin and it's ugly, but it's technically graded. And that's the key. NGC doesn't grade for eye appeal. They grade for technical grading. And so a coin that technically grades 66 but has no eye appeal, it's going to sell for less than what the price guides say. Mm-hmm. So if you get an ugly coin, I don't care how cheap it is, don't buy it.
Don't buy an ugly coin.
It's the rule.
When you get, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, make a pretty girl your wife or whatever that song was.
Never make a pretty girl.
Never make a pretty girl your wife, yeah. Mm-hmm. FDA may pull the flavored e-cigarettes because of a youth vaping epidemic. Tobacco companies have something to do with this one?
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
I don't understand vaping. Do you?
I do.
What is it?
It's where you basically make a liquid compound, and then you put all the elements of the smoke into the compound.
You mean the nicotine?
And everything. Flavor, nicotine, anything else you want to put in there. And then it's absorbed through this vaporizing rather than...
you breathe in. You see people sucking on these things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Man. And just like in the early days of cigarettes, nobody said to you, oh, this is horrible stuff, and, you know, it's bad for you and all that. It was, oh, it tastes great, and all. You think of all the advertising.
Right.
Well, the same thing was done with vaping. It came to the market too quick, and it was promoted as safe
and effective.
Great replacement. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Less major bleeding, right?
Right, all of it. Less.
Less That's major right. bleeding.
So now we've got a whole generation of young kids hooked on this vaping. And goodness, the flavored, banning it? Well, if you're going to ban cigarettes, you know, it's getting harder to smoke in New York City. You just, no matter where you go, you can't even, like, smoke on the sidewalk. People have got signs out
on the
sidewalk.
You're going to have to move to North Dakota or something like
somewhere
that.
Somewhere where freedom is still appreciated.
Yeah.
Or maybe somewhere where you're not around people. And for me, you know, I still smoke. I probably consume Carlton cigarettes more than anybody else in this state. Only because they don't sell them, right? So they have no tar, no nicotine. I've told the story where I've given these to people who are begging, and they actually put them out, threw them down, and went about their business to try to beg a real cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And I just make it a rule, if there are people around, well, I'm not going to smoke.
Yeah. Just
go where they aren't.
I don't know.
Maybe North Dakota's the answer there.
Why couldn't they make it more healthful if you just do straight nicotine? Nicotine is not really the problem with cigarettes. It's all the chemicals.
It's all the chemicals.
Why wouldn't you just do olive oil or, I don't know, and with nicotine, let people just suck on that little
sucker. There you go. Make a better cigarette.
Make a better cigarette. Why?
An organic one.
Yeah, an organic cigarette. Right? organic nicotine.
It is the truth, though.
Why don't just do that?
The same thing happened to cigarettes that happened to food that happened to money.
Yeah.
It was all good until they started adulterating it. And, we're going to mix and match and take things out and put things in and... That's where,
I understand.
Where did we go?
Here's somebody in the UK, there with the Queen. Hi there.
Hey, UK.
Hey, UK. Jonathan Brand is his name.
Hi, John.
Greetings from across the pond. Love the show. In the last month, my wife and I have listened to every show this year as we turn around our rental properties. I'm feeling suitably better informed, at least half more than the challenges, opportunities ahead. Two questions for Andrew. See, look at you're making a difference.
Thank you,
sir, Andrew.
Thanks, man.
See what I mean?
Okay.
How long do you think we will have till interest rates skyrocket? From my layman's research, it seems like the UK shadows the US. We don't have a property portfolio and are trying to decide the best way to ride the wave. Okay.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so
Nostradamus, he's not.
Yeah,
but
I said at the beginning of this year, at the end of last year, that I think in the U.S. we're going to see 4 rate increases this year. I fully expected the Fed to raise rates by 0.25 point at the last meeting, but I'm convinced they're going to do it at this next meeting,
which is coming up in 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
No way they can ignore the explosive growth in the United States. Whether the Bank of England follows, they generally do, yeah. So I think we're 4 rate increases this year in the U.S., 4 rate increases in 2019, maybe 6 in 2019, depending on how good it gets. It's sad, but remember that the better it gets, the more likely rates are to go up. So
because they want to kind of
they got to cool it off,
cooling off inflation.
That's what McChesney Martin said. The Fed's job is to take the punch bowl just when the party's getting
which
good,
which is what they're doing now, right?
They're moving towards the punch bowl.
I see.
So if you can get a fixed rate of interest,
and
you're buying your personal home, this would probably be a good time. If you're an investor, however,
which I think they are because they're talking about rental properties, right?
Yeah, I can't really speak to the laws in Great Britain as it relates to property because I'm not there. I don't understand them. I know folks tell me that the Canadian market, for example, mortgages are different than they are in the United States. But as a general rule, locking in a fixed rate mortgage on your personal house would be a great thing to do right now. And buying anything, even especially investment real estate, with a variable rate mortgage would be a huge mistake.
Now, you don't want to do that.
So if you can get an owner-financed rental property, or if you can buy a rental property with a fixed rate of return, you probably will be doing a good thing for yourself. I've believed that real estate should be a part of every investment portfolio since I was 18 years old when I bought my first
house. Yeah, but as you said many times, Andrew Goss, I'm going to quote you here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. A gold coin doesn't call you up at 2 in the morning and tell you the plumbing doesn't work.
That is true.
It doesn't do it.
Being a landlord requires a
whole... Of course, you can't hire people to do that, right?
You can.
Okay.
But being a landlord requires a different mentality.
All right.
So, I mean, I found myself faced with a family in a rental property that couldn't pay the rent, and I didn't have the heart to put them out. That's it. So... if you can be cold and callous and ignore, that's why for me rental real estate is not the way to go. Because as interest rates rise and the economy gets worse, you'll hear every litany of sob story that you can imagine. And an alternative here in the United States, we have these real estate investment trusts.
REITs.
Where you don't have to make any of those sorts of decisions. Professional managers do them all and they're exchange traded. So you can buy and sell them like shares of stock.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out in Great Britain if you have real estate investment trusts. Here in the United States, the big thing now is factory and warehouse space where these big cyber sellers, Amazon and the others, need to store their goods centrally so that they can,
when they sell them,
they can deliver them where they need to go. And that's a big thing here. A REIT that specializes in warehouse space might be a great investment.
So Jonathan and wife, who are listening to every show now, what if they would buy some UK real money coins, numismatic coins?
Oh yeah, sovereigns.
British sovereigns. So what's a sovereign? So that's
the British sovereign is the equivalent of our $5 gold piece.
Okay.
You know,
they could buy those over there.
Yeah, and exempt from VAT. Just stack them up, as they say.
No VAT tax on a
British sovereign for British people. So load yourself up on those. The only problem is, obviously, with real estate, you can leverage a great amount of real estate with a small amount of down payment thanks to the mortgage market. We don't have mortgages in the numismatic market. You cash and carry, so the price is pure. It's a supply and demand market. And I would just point out that if interest rates rise in Great Britain, which I fully expect they will,
you'll
get the same rate increases. Otherwise, you'll get the arbitrage players that are borrowing British pounds, converting them into dollars, and then selling them into the dollar market.
So you're saying that the Jonathan and wife would want to do some from the Royal Mint and not bullion coins, is it?
No, British sovereigns. Yeah.
Okay,
British
so because he's got here, I've discovered that some Royal Mint coins are CGT free over here. What does that mean? CGT.
Well,
it must be a tax.
National sales tax.
Okay.
Yeah. The trouble is the modern mintages are huge and they're none lost through attrition. They're all saved in pristine condition. You go back pre-Depression. You guys went through it just as we did. You buy yourself British sovereigns from the 1880s and 90s and
that'd
so
be
forth.
Good.
There you go.
Yeah, there you
then
go.
You know that all of them are distributed. No, there's no big overhang. Great many were lost through attrition, and it's a pure supply and demand market. That would be a good place to put money. But that really wasn't the question, was it? The question was, should they buy real estate?
Well, they got two questions, yeah.
Do they think
second question was coin collecting.
Yeah. So interest rates are rising. Now, what's been my experience is that at the top of that interest rate cycle, when rates are 12, 13, 14, 15%, the price of the real estate will be lower. That's the whole intent of raising
because you have less demand.
Less demand, less buyers. And you can buy it at a lower price, lock up that equity or lock up the property, pay the 15% until rates come back down, and then refinance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a smart guy you are.
That's the time to buy, in my opinion, when, you know, real estate sales are grind to a halt because interest rates are too high.
When in the 80s or 81, when Reagan was coming in, and interest rates were 15-18%. I mean, huge.
Yeah.
How long did it take for them to get back down to reasonable so you could refi?
Six years.
Oh, that's not terrible.
And then you were refinancing three or four more times beyond that.
So you just keep doing it.
Yeah, just keep refinancing the way down.
Down to five or whatever.
That's what it was. But, you know, even then I was so terrified of adjustable rate mortgages. I told so many people, don't take an adjustable rate mortgage. When if you would have had the guts to take one, then rates would have actually gone down. You wouldn't have had to refinance. It's a mixed bag, but I would say, generally speaking, you want to buy real estate when interest rates are very high, sellers are everywhere, and buyers are nowhere to be found. And you want to sell that real estate at the opposite end of that. One of my favorite quotes that I've kind of held close to my heart for the last 40 years was Andrew Carnegie.
Oh, Carnegie. We like
Carnegie,
him.
Carnegie, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great wealth is built through the judicious acquisition and disposal of real estate. Judicious acquisition and disposal.
That's great wealth.
That's great wealth.
Greatwealth.com. Oh, and Carnegie. Okay, you got time to stick around a few more minutes?
For you, Patrick.
Oh, baby. Okay, so we're gonna dig a little bit more into Ray Dalio and some of the things he's going to say about China, tariffs, and the Fed, and also... copper. There's a story about copper we're going to ask Andrew about. And also a couple other things, tax reform 2.0, and also take some other of your emails, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Now we're going to protect ourselves from EMFs. Previously, we talked with Brandon Amalani about his Blue Shield product to protect against EMFs in your home.
The more connected we are, the more electromagnetic radiation we're going to have. So years ago, I'd play with Q-Links and just anything I can get my hands on that, whether I felt it working or not, I just wanted some kind of leverage against electromagnetic radiation and those frequencies and how they affect the cellular biology. But then when I met Mark and started really getting deep to his technology and really looking at the microprocessing technology, I've never found any EMF company that would not only to test on not only human blood and urine analysis, but also on animals, which totally weeds out the idea of placebo effect. I mean, the fact that you can plug these devices into a chicken farm, a factory farm, for about 15,000 laying hens, and all of a sudden the mortality rate, which is averages from 60 to 150 deaths per month, goes down to zero. I mean, it's pretty profound that a little device, a little energy device, could actually like create such a harmony and balance within the environment to where claustrophobic chickens that are crammed in together actually get along better and actually feel better. The biological markers are improved over that 1 year study.
There's quite a bit of science with this Blue Shield product. You can see the ad on the front page. Promo code One Radio will get you a 10% discount. This works on the cells in the body. Very cool technology. Front page, Blue Shield. OneRadioNetwork.com. Sure, glad I got one of these little puppies because I sit around here and all these MFs, I call them MFs, like Jamo's, in this studio. I got plenty. And, I'm still doing very, very well. Thank you very much. Knock on wood, knock on my head. And you can get a little portable deal. It's about the size of a credit card for a few $100. And you just plug it in with a USB on your computer. And it'll last a long time so you don't have to keep charging it up. And just push a little button and put that puppy in your pocket and carry it around with you when you're driving around getting 5G'd or wherever you go and going to coffee shops where they got Wi-Fi and all kinds of stuff. And it'll help. It'll just help your body to deal with these things. You know, there's no, you know, it's not like a Faraday cage or anything like that, but this is real technology that really works. Blue Shield, if you have questions, you can email Brandon and he'll answer all your questions. Blue Shield, you see the ad, use promo code ONERADIO, 10% off on everything. Recently, we asked Daniel Vitalis if taking pine pollen would dampen the body's own testosterone-building mechanism.
Yeah, some research has been done to see if pine pollen would have that kind of effect, because we see that with pharmaceutical testosterone supplementation. But what they found was you'd have to take the equivalent of about 2 bottles per day of our pine pollen extract to create that kind of an effect. So it's really safe for people at any age, and we found it to be really safe for both men and women. Today, a lot of women are also looking at testosterone replacement therapy. And I think before anybody looks to the pharmaceutical industry for anti-aging therapies, for anabolic therapies, they should probably look to nature first, and they should probably look to SirThrival's pine pollen products. And not just our pine pollen gold extract, but also our pine pollen pure potency, which contains erythritol root and also stinging nettle root, which helps to free testosterone that's already in the body but has been bound up. It helps to free that in the blood.
That's my favorite, the 4 P's.
Really. Yeah, the 4 P's. That's what you want to get. 4 P's. 4 P's. A pure potency pollen thing. I do my little shot every day, have for years, and my body just loves it. I don't know. It just kind of loves it. You might love it too. So you go to any SirThrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com. Don't forget they also have the new one, which is the bitters, the digestive bitters. You spray that on your mouth like psh, 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 and you can do that before you go in a restaurant. Have one in your glove compartment. Very inexpensive. Have one at home. My tummy really likes it. You know, I got kind of a sensitive little baby ear anyway. And yeah, tummy karma. Working on my tummy karma. But it's a beautiful thing, the digestive bitters. They also have the vitamin DK2 product and then the Shaga and the Rishi. Great company. In Myron Glass, it is SirThrival. Here's physicist, biologist, chemist, Dr. Gerald Pollack on far infrared saunas.
Infrared energy is what builds this fourth phase of water. And the idea of a sauna, you know, you go in and you sweat and you receive this infrared energy and you feel great after you come out. I felt the same, and so have so many people. And most of us think, well, you know, it's just some sort of psychological issue, and it might be. However, experimentally, we know that infrared energy builds the fourth phase. Your cells should be filled with this fourth phase, but you know, we tend to be somewhat dehydrated and missing some of this fourth phase. And so what happens is, if you subject yourself to infrared, the infrared is absorbed by your body, absorbed by your cells, and it converts ordinary water to fourth phase water, and then you feel better.
How cool is that? That is cool, Patrick. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I think it's an interesting idea. I sure feel, I don't know. I you know, get yourself one of these. You like it. Just check it out. Go on the front page and do the sauna ad, and you just email me, and we'll get you one for $9.95. We're going to be talking more about it. It's because I just think these things are just massively important for your health, and for $9.95, you know, what an investment in your health. And of course, you got to be careful, because you probably live a lot longer, and then you got to just, you know, take care, don't outlive, you know, your money thing. And it gets tricky.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Every Wednesday, we talk with Andrew Goss. He's a currency historian. He buys and sells gold coins for a living. SDL Incorporated, SDL Incorp, and it's in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and also Hilton Head. His number is 800-468-2646, 800-468-2646. Does that number get... How do they know where they're going if they want to reach you?
It follows me wherever I am.
Really?
The official headquarters of the company is now South Carolina, and New Jersey is the subsidiary.
No kidding.
So the phone follows me. If I'm in New Jersey, the phone's in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. If I'm in South Carolina, the phone's in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you could keep it, move it back to
to New Jersey, to the headquarters, and then you could pay more taxes and you'd be more patriotic.
No thanks. Okay. I'll pass.
Yeah. You know, speaking of that, I guess this 2.0 tax thing that Ryan is trying to push through and not worry about the wall, he wants to make this permanent, right, the $10,000 state and local tax cap, right? That's part of the 2.0?
Yes.
And also permanent the lower tax rates, which is good for individuals.
Right.
Eliminate, I wanted to ask you about this, eliminate the maximum age for your retirement accounts. What is that? So this is part of 2.0. They want to allow you to keep putting in until you
go. As long as you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
But now you can't?
No, I think there's a limit now.
Okay.
On the age.
Okay, so they want to do that on 2.0. And then business write-offs are going to be easier for startup costs, I guess. But so it doesn't look like there's a lot of stuff in this tax reform 2.0 thing.
No, anything to distract you from the wall.
That's what I was just going to say. See, I was ahead of you there, kid.
Yeah.
That why, you know, they just don't want to do this wall thing, do they?
No, they do not want to do
this. Because?
Hard to say why. Pressure. You know, Paul Ryan is always...
Oh, from the Global Eye?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Paul Ryan has always been famous for playing both ends against the middle.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to compromise.
Is he going to get out of there then? Is he out this...
Yeah, he's done.
Okay, who's going to be the new dude? Do we know?
Who knows? That's
does something... Donald get to put in his favorite
no,
guy?
No.
That's could put in Melania or
the House of Representatives. Fix their speaker of the House. He doesn't have to be a member of the House. That's mm-hmm. interesting.
Oh, does it?
No.
We could put in the Pope, but he's got his own problems, so we'll just skip that for now. what else? So did you see this? So the president's now saying, you know, what we could do, we could just get the Army Corps of Engineers to build the wall.
Yes.
Now, he is commander-in-chief.
Yes,
right?
He can.
He controls the military.
Yeah.
He could just tell them to go build the thing and, you know, they'll just borrow more money to pay it. I don't know.
Pretty much.
Pretty much, huh?
Yeah.
Boy, is he gonna make a few people cry oysters? Tears? Jeez, man. You think he's gonna do this?
Well, I can understand why they want to impeach him, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, to them mm-hmm. it's like you gotta admire the way the left fights though. They don't You know, no prisoners, right? Mm-hmm. All the rules are gone. There are no rules. It's, you know, win at all costs. And they're taking that very seriously for this midterm election.
So do you think a wall has been called the wall all the way? Do you think this would really help the issue a lot? Do we know?
Well, let's just say the general category of tightening up our borders
would be good.
Yeah.
Got to be good, right?
Yeah.
Plus, you could do drones around it and kind of keep an eye on things.
Sure.
Right? You wouldn't have to have soldiers everywhere.
No. The thing is, I don't mind people coming into my country.
Well, yeah.
Just like I don't mind people visiting my house, just not when I'm not there. You know, I don't want them sneaking in. I don't know they're there. So, okay, you're a visitor at my house. At least stop by the front door and knock and say, hey, Andy, I'm at your house.
And I'm a nice guy. And
Whatever.
I'm not going to take your stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
So that's all I really want. If you're going to come into this country, register. Let me know that you're here. That's all. Just don't sneak in. That's it. Mm-hmm. Seems simple enough.
I don't think so. Okay, well, let's do a little more Ray, and then we'll go. This fellow is Bridgewater. We go to him every now and then because he's one of the smart cookies on the block. He goes
Ray Diallo.
He goes mm-hmm. Ray Diallo.
Bridgewater
he goes, Castle. Yeah, he goes to Davos and he hangs out with the boys, right?
Right.
He does. But he's never pulled punches as far until. So somebody asked him, I think CNBC, about what would you do? What should the Fed do now?
I think the Fed should make sure that it doesn't raise rates faster than is discounted in the curve, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because there's an interest rate curve that calculates how fast rates are going to rise. That rate curve is priced into all asset classes, into bonds, stocks, everything else. And so they should make sure that they're, you know, right. not quite as fast as the curve or equal to the curve. Because asset prices are very sensitive.
Okay, so what you talking about there? So explain that to us a little bit.
Well, the marketplace sort of recognizes that this is the yield curve, the difference between money that's loaned for 2 years and money that's loaned for 30 years.
Two and 30.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
the... And 2 and 10 is really the spread that everyone concerns themselves with. Mm-hmm. 2 and 10 year spread.
Okay.
So the 2 and 10 year spread reflects what the marketplace believes is happening to interest rates. And so Ray is suggesting that the Fed keep a close eye on the market and don't get ahead of them. Don't raise rates faster than the marketplace thinks they should go. And that'll eliminate people freaking out, because he's right. They factor this into every asset class. So when the difference between the 2 year and the 10 year gets greater, then they're expressing, okay, we expect that 10 year rates, long term rates, are going to rise. And when it gets more narrow, they expect that they're not. So you should keep up as the Fed with the market. Don't let I think I said this about a year ago, that the market will force the Fed to raise interest rates, and that's what's happening. And Diallo suggests, and correctly so, that the Fed should let the marketplace determine where rates should be. So the Fed shouldn't be behind or ahead. It should reflect.
But they're smart enough to do that, right? No?
That's right.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
You wonder.
Yeah, sometimes you wonder. But I think they could do a lot more in the way of tightening or loosening the money supply according to how much they run off their balance sheet. So there are more factors at play than just raising or lowering interest rates. Mm-hmm.
I don't have the name of it, and I'm going to check it out, but he's actually got a free book out there. Have you
heard about it? And probably one of the best free financial educations anywhere. He goes through chapter and verse.
Do we know the name of that?
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's at Bridgewater Capital.
Oh, just do Bridgewater Capital. Mm-hmm. I think it's a PDF thing too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I want to get that and read that sucker.
Yeah,
that's good. So final clip from Mr. Ray, and I think this is about China. And I found this kind of interesting, might be worth listening.
What do you think the Fed should do right now?
I think the Fed should make sure that it doesn't raise rates.
What do you think, Patrick, should do the right clip?
Okay. I think that the actual size of the tariffs and trade on the Chinese economy is not that big a deal. And that, there's the $500 billion that they export. There's the size of that. They've got a giant economy and they can handle those types of things. So I don't think it's that big of a deal for them. I think the big deal is what the nature of the relationship is. Is this going to be a relationship in which there's sort of the give and take, or is this going to be an antagonistic relationship? I think the real issue of China, a leader in China described it as follows. He said, in the United States, that unit that matters the most is the individual. You are a country of individualists. You protect individual property rights in a certain way. If you understand our mentality, we are a family. In other words, the word country in China, in characters, is state family. Hmm. And he says, when we run the country, we think about how you, a head of a family, would run the family. So it's very much more from a top down. It's very much more hierarchical. So the notion of China Inc., in other words, of course, there's almost a pyramid, and they think at the head of the family, at the head of the government, they think, what is best for China and my Chinese companies? And so that approach, very much different from our approach, which is this bottom up, and it redefines so many things, how we handle data, how we handle each other, and so on. That's a very structural, important difference. It works for them.
Well, but isn't that what Mr. Trump is doing more? So he said it's different from us. I don't think it is.
Well, yeah, we are still about the rights of the individual. I think what he's trying to say was in China they're not so much concerned with the rights of the individual. It's more socialist, like what's good for the country and what's good for
the state.
Even if it's a bit of an inconvenience for the individual, well, that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's where communism is.
Yeah. Lester says, I've always liked your idea of taking over the Fed, as you talked about in the show a lot of times, rather than auditing the Fed, as Ron Paul suggested. So I'm paraphrasing because this is kind of long. He said, so if the government would take over the Fed, would that mean they would never borrow any money, and anytime they needed it, they would just print it?
Well, it would mean
how
they
could
wouldn't,
you do that?
They wouldn't pay interest anymore.
But right. But so I guess he's asking, would you, anytime you went short dollars, would you just create it?
Yeah.
All the time. Would you put out treasury notes to China and other places like that?
No.
You wouldn't even need to do that.
No, why would you?
I don't know.
There's no reason.
That's what he's asking. So you could just, so if you went short a trillion, you could just print up the trillion yourself.
Put it into circulation.
Put it into circulation, buy bombs or whatever you buy, and deal with whatever inflationary issues that are.
And pay no interest.
Yeah.
Most important.
So to pay no interest, does that kind of balance out the inflationary stuff?
Well,
because see, Americans are going to pay for this because they're going to pay with rising prices.
That's right.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
But not just Americans, but anyone who holds a dollar all over the world.
You get to spread it around.
You get to spread that cost.
I like that.
So instead of...
I like that.
It's much better.
Yeah. Boy, you better make sure that President Trump doesn't hear this clip. Because if he gets a hold of this one, man, he's going to be in the bunker forever. He couldn't even... He could go outside. You talk about doing talks around the country. He wouldn't be able to do that. No, they wouldn't be happy with that, would they?
No.
Ooh.
No. Now, the amount of money that's made from that is mind-boggling. Well, you just think about, we talked about already, at least $400 billion annually in interest on the national debt.
Yeah. So if you had the magic checkbook in the Fed, what would you do with that $21 trillion in debt? Just leave it there?
Yeah.
Just create the money and pay the $400 billion?
Correct.
Ah, okay. Just let it sit there.
I certainly
would. And mold, right?
I would continue with the tax cut because...
Just keep things rolling.
Yeah.
And then just create the $400 billion, pay the interest, and just, you know, who cares, right?
Right.
And see what happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm voting for you, dude.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Not running.
Mm-hmm. Retail investors can now sell credit default swaps with an ETF. Oh, this is good. So they're doing more JMO money.
Yes.
They just don't stop, do they?
No, they do
they
not.
They just don't stop.
And the more genetically modified money enters circulation and is homogenized with regular money, the more you can't tell them apart.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty soon, all money is genetically modified and there's no way around it.
This comes from a listener who says, maybe Andrew's right about bail-ins. This article, a San Jose widow who entrusted her late husband's life insurance payout to Wells Fargo says the bank has lost her $30,000 investment. Oh, they lost it. Whoops. Well, no, just poof, it's not there.
Yeah.
Did you see that they're going after Wells Fargo more? What's going on with this company? They just keep screwing up.
Well,
They just don't stop. A new probe after review found widespread document altering.
Yeah.
Every month they come up with more stuff. They must have a really weird culture at Wells Fargo.
Well, they've got to cover up a lot of the stuff that was done.
What they
already
did in 2008.
Yeah. So that's what the majority of this is about. I think that, you know, the problems have largely been solved, but they did so much covering up.
So when you start lying, you just got to...
Yeah, you just got to keep going.
You can't lie your way out, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, finally, tell us why copper has been kind of a metric for the future in finances, right?
Yeah.
Why is that? Because
it's kind of like the base metal, right? Copper's in everything.
Oh.
And, you know, with the trade tensions brewing the way they were, I think it was in June of this year, copper prices hit a four-year high, something like $7,000 a ton.
Yeah.
And now I think they're down around $5,000 a ton.
Well, 5,000 contracts equaling 25,000 pounds of copper,
correct,
16 times the 100-day moving average, were sold between 8:45 and 8:48 yesterday morning in New York. Well, did you see the chart on that sucker, man? So I wonder what's up with that. Do you have any idea?
Somebody knows something we
don't.
That's
what the article is about. What does somebody know?
Yes, and it is...
What does somebody know?
President Trump. Huh? Remember when he was running after he won the nomination, I said, hey, all he needs to do is put a 25% tariff on imported Chinese goods across the
board.
That's
what you said. I know.
Yeah. Well, he's put it on a lot of them, but now it's going to be pretty much across the board. And I mean, after today, we'll have a better picture. But it was the strictly these trade tensions. And believe me, I think he's trying to make a deal. He doesn't want to continue like this. He wants to make a deal. And you don't want to make a deal? Great, then we're going to take, you know, this step.
And that's because that's his M.O., right?
That is his M.O.,
get strong and be tough and call them names, whatever.
Yeah. And do that in the name of the American people. Uh-huh. So goods made of copper are probably going to increase rather dramatically because the Chinese are loath to make a deal. They would really like to keep things the way they are. And they'll do everything they can to avoid making a deal, which unfortunately means higher copper prices. So I think we'll end the year probably at a five-year high this year. So, and next year, who knows? Think of the things that are made of copper, and you'll see how that can quickly translate into higher prices across the board.
Mm-hmm. Well, lots to look at. Anything going to really be spectacular this fall, or it's just going to be
the same? Yeah, same more of the same, like the death of a thousand cuts. You know? The producer price numbers, producer price index, that was good. I mean, we need a few of those. It can't just be straight up, although that's what I expect. So I don't know if this is a record-keeping anomaly, but, you know, for the first time in 18 months, we've seen producer prices fall, and we'll see what that... I think that was a lot of supply chain stuffing in advance of tariffs. You know, we're going to go ahead and sell as much of this stuff as we can now before the tariffs are put into place, so that caused producer prices to fall.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep an eye on things with you here every Wednesday. Thank you, Andrew Goss.
Yes,
and,
thank you.
So your new headquarters in Hilton Head, you guys are going to be south of Florence, right?
Yes. Yeah.
She's going to come up there to the north, according
to you. Yeah, we're in the crook there. Right? Yeah. You know, there have only been, like I said, two hurricanes there in like the last 100 years. And, I mean, I feel for the folks up the coast, but that Hurricane Alley's been being battered by hurricanes now for a long time. This isn't like something new.
Yeah, they've had about, three or four since the 1900s.
3,000. It's
a lot of them.
A lot of hurricanes. That's why, if you look at that coastline, why it's so eroded like that. And to build a house there, I mean, it's not like I didn't consider moving to the Outer Banks in North Carolina. It would be even closer. But at the end of the day, Hilton Head seems to be a much safer spot as it relates to hurricanes.
Yeah, it's just
hard to get in that little crook there. You know,
is that what it is?
It's right there at the border of Georgia and right before Florida heads south.
Well, I hear they got a lot of golf courses there. Now, I could be then motivated to move there someday so I could just play golf every day.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of golf courses there.
Yep.
That's something you never did, right?
Right.
Well, you don't have time to play golf when you take care of
I don't have a lot of time.
Take care of your kids and take care of four businesses. All right, kiddo, what's your phone number there? And we're going to go for the day. Thanks.
Give me a call, 800-468-2646.
800-468-2646. Mm-hmm. All right, good day to you, sir. Thanks. Have a good one. We'll see you real soon. Mm-hmm. Buy your Horastral. Don't forget to order.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did. All right, thanks. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, it is the Real World of Money. I love you all very much. We will see you tomorrow, Thursday. We're going to talk about a really cool doctor about the brain and the brain, and also get a wonderful story from Fraser Bailey, who actually listened to this show and figured out that the root canals were his problem, that he was trying to get well for 10 years or so, and he made an incredible a documentary that Netflix has got or something bought. So we're going to talk to him tomorrow and get his story. And it's a pretty cool story. So it's all happening tomorrow. I appreciate your ongoing support. Thank you for looking at our products when you want to buy something for your body. And we have some great stuff, great products. And we know the source of all these. So that's why our trademark is Know the Source. I love you all very much. Take care of yourself. See you tomorrow.
Know the Source on One Radio Network.